hear it. You're listening to Talking Hoosier Baseball, a podcast by fans from the iubase.com website for anyone wanting more info on Indiana University baseball. Today is Wednesday, April 24th, 2019. I'm Josh Bennett, joined by stats guru Cassidy Palmer, master of the RPI Carl James, and the man who loves to yell, "It hit the chalk," every time he attends a game at Victory Field, Mr. Chris Feeney. Well, the Hoosiers got last week off started on the right foot in the midweek against Ball State at the BART with a low-stress slugfest in which five different Hoosiers went yard, including Sam Crail's first as a Hoosier. Scotty Bradley, Matt Gorski, and Grant Richardson each had multi-hit games, while Tommy Summer was strong, allowing only two runs, which, as Coach Mercer said post-game, probably should have been prevented in his six innings of work. Matt Litwicki and Austin Long closed the 14-3 win by allowing just one hit in three innings combined. Then this weekend provided a Big Ten matchup up in East Lansing against the Michigan State Spartans. Their first ever Big Ten game under the lights, as they just got those installed this season. And as usual on Friday night, Pauly Milto was, as Aaron Fitt would say, the Gator wrestler he always is, on the mound, and went seven strong innings while allowing four runs, no walks, seven Ks, and picked up his sixth win in the season. Six Hoosiers had multi-hit games: Ashley, Gorski, Bradley, Richardson, Dunham, and Cross. Braden Scott and Austin Long finished out the game by striking out five Spartans and not giving up a run in the 13-4 IU romp. Saturday ended up being a rainout, setting up an Easter Sunday doubleheader. In Game 1, Tanner Gordon was absolutely rolling before being hit by a comebacker in the fifth inning. He did finish the inning but did not come back out for the sixth. The Hoosiers managed to take a 3-0 lead into the bottom of the seventh with Justin Walker's first home run of the season. But unfortunately, the Spartans were able to rally for five runs in the bottom half of that seventh, and the Hoosiers were unable to get anything going on in the eighth or ninth, and took a 5-3 loss to set up the rubber match for the second game of the doubleheader. The Bats came back to life in Game 2 as Drew Ashley led off with a double, and Matt Gorski made sure starter Andrew Sal Frank would have the lead as he took the mound by hitting an opposite field home run. Sally was as outstanding as he has been for the last month and a half, allowing just two hits and one run in his seven innings on the mound. He also managed 11 strikeouts for the game, making that the fourth consecutive time out with a double-digit strikeout. Walker and Cross would join Gorski by hitting a home run later in that game. Bradley, Lloyd, and Gorski each had multi-hit games in the 11-2 Hoosier win to take the series. On Monday, the three most prominent baseball media outlets ranked the Hoosiers in the top 25, with D1 Baseball having the Hoosiers at 23. So that's our recap, and that will bring us to our highlight segment of the week. I'll kick it off. And I know there was a ton of offense this last week, but I'm going to go with the leather that was being flashed around the BART last Tuesday night. Cole Barr had incredible diving stops on back-to-back plays and managed to get to his feet and get the out at first both times. Matt Gorski had an outstanding sliding catch in the left center field gap. And the best to me was Grant Richardson's head first all-out catch down the right field line. I know the play didn't quite end there, but what a grab. Just an amazing display of athleticism all over the field that night. So, Cass, what's your Hoosier highlight of the week?
For me, it wasn't any one particular thing, but just being able to bounce back from that tough loss in the first game on Saturday to take the series, which they needed to do. Team wouldn't be ranked, wouldn't be in the hosting discussion if they had dropped a series to Michigan State. So being able to handle that little bit of adversity was really, and to do it in dominating fashion, 11-2 after that was really good to see, and to see it immediately. And I think that helps long term. So, Chris, what was your highlight this week?
Well, for me, it absolutely was one thing. I'm going to go with the home run over the video board, the grand slam by Matt Gorski. I mean, you go to a ball game, you know, they say you might never know what you're going to see. There are games that you remember at the BART, and this plays you remember at the bar, you're going to remember for a long, long time. You know, I remember Schwarber broke up a no-hitter in, like, the top of the ninth one night with a shot to the wall, and this kid was throwing great. We came back and won it in a walk-off. I think it was Will Height, possibly, that won it. The Miller and Sowers back-to-back home runs, that's something I'm always going to remember. And I'm always going to remember when Matt Gorski came up and cracked the ball over the video board. Because I don't think too many more people are going to do it. It's definitely my Hoosier highlight. What a moment. We had just put out a poll, who's going to, you know, win the home run race. Is it going to be Barr? Is it going to be Gorski? Is it going to be Lloyd? And Gorski got like 5% of the vote. I know he was back four home runs. It was 13-9 at the time, I believe. But I got a feeling Gorski's coming. He's hit two since the poll. I don't know. Maybe it fired him up. I'm not sure. But my Hoosier highlight absolutely is that ball hit over the scoreboard. What about you, Carl?
For me, I'm just going to talk about the offense in the first five innings on Friday night. Going back, actually years, the Hoosiers, and particularly the last few weeks, the Hoosiers had struggled a bit in facing a team's best starter on Friday night. And the Hoosiers jumped out. They got four runs in the first four innings and then eventually managed to run the starter. And then got into the walk fest that eventually led them to a very large cushion to win that Friday night game, even with having given up some runs. So for me, it's that kind of psychological breaking through that, okay, after a couple of weeks of just not giving Paulie Milto run support, they've now had a couple of weeks where they've given him run support. And it's like, okay, now you can go out there and compete, and the team can go try to compete in every game and look for sweeps, which if you're going in these last four Big Ten weeks, it's going to require two, maybe three sweeps in order to win a Big Ten title towards possibly, you know, getting to a hosting situation. So now we get to the red belts. Chris, what are we doing in the way of red belts for this week?
All right. Thanks, Carl. First off, last night does not count for these red belts. All right. Those are going to count for the next one, just so we can put that out there. So, you know, maybe Gorski gets one for that outstanding grab, but it won't be this week. So what we're going to do for the Joey Donato Pitching Award red belt, we're going to go with the Sunday performance from Andrew Southfrank. Seven innings, two hits, one run scored. And his trademark apparently now is double-digit Ks, and he did throw up 11. Every time he goes out there, is it going to be 14? Is it going to be 10? I know we had some media from Tanner Gordon, I think it was 2 weeks ago, and he's waiting for that 15K. You know, he wants Sal Frank to own the record. You know, he wants to pass that 14. He wants 15 for Sal Frank, and he might do it. But I hope he does it at the BART because I want, you know, feed the people type thing. For the Tony Butler Award, this one wasn't easy. Josh talked about all those great defensive plays we saw at the BART before the weekend series started. So, I'm thinking, what am I going to do here? I couldn't see, you know, thanks to Michigan State and BTN Plus's amazing video feed. I couldn't even talk to somebody who watched it really on TV. So I reached out to Greg Murray, who I knew had a great view of the Grant Richardson catch on the hill. And let's see if we can quote him, because he actually gave me a pretty good quote. Really impressive. He got put on an awkward angle with the hill, and he made it look routine. So for the defensive red belt to Tony Butler, we're going to go with Grant Richardson for his catch on the hill. You know, that's a special play. And from the sound of Greg's voice, and that's why I reached out to him, because I had a feeling it really was a special grab. So he gets the red belt for that one. And for your Alex Dickerson Award, this one really wasn't that hard to do. Matt Gorski went 9-for-17 by my math. I'm not Cassidy. I could be a little off there. Two homers, 10 RBIs. He had two 4-RBI games. He had four walks. He scored six runs. And this is not including last night. This is just the other four games. At one point, he went 5 at-bats with it. Nobody could get him out. He hit the bomb over the scoreboard. Three more hits. Then he walked. And then somebody finally got him out after a while. And he even threw in a steal. His 14th steal, which leads the team. So Gorski really fills up the stat sheet, which we know he does. But, you know, he felt like we hadn't heard from him in a while, right? And then he shows up in a big way this week. And he continued it last night. And I would expect for it to continue some more. So for the red belts for this week, for defensive, Grant Richardson on the hill. for Joey Donato to off the pitching, Andrew South Frank's Sunday performance, Easter Sunday. And for Dickerson, we're going Matt Gorski. Now, for this week, what we're going to do is we're going to transition from the red belts that were won this week over to some future Hoosiers that might be soon coming to the bar to win some red belts themselves. We talked about a few last week. And for today, I wanted to bring up Garrett Manis. Okay, this guy recently went 4-for-4 with 2 RBIs. He hit a triple. He's the leadoff hitter for his high school team in Munster High School. This guy has wheels, okay? He's an outfielder. He can cover a ton of ground. Believe it or not, he runs the 6.45 60-yard dash. That's an official time. I've heard a lot of people question. I read an article, and like he has to prove it to people that it actually happened. And for comparison, Matt Gorski got timed at 6.5 after his freshman year at a Prospect League All-Star game. So that's faster than Gorski was after his freshman year. And, you know, put him with the training staff here at IU. Who knows? Maybe his speed goes up even more. Garrett Manis is a big-time prospect for this year from Max Preps. I got his stats. He's hitting .583. He's got a .656 on-base percentage, 3 triples, 2 homers, 5 steals, and 15 RBIs. And this is a high school season we're talking about, and not even barely half of one. So I'm real excited to have him show up. Now, you might have heard the name Manis before. Obviously, Connor is already a Hoosier himself, and they'll be the brothers playing together. And the last time two brothers played together as Hoosiers, you might have heard of them, Walker and Sully Stadler, and that was 2013. And that year worked out pretty good. So maybe having two brothers again next year, you know, I'm all for it, at least worth a try. And after the game Connor had last night, I thought it was perfect to bring up Garrett because Connor was really solid on the mound at Victory Field last night. Now, another high school athlete we're going to talk about is Brian Gaffney. He recently got a win for Center Grove. He's a big-time athlete, okay? He plays on a football team. He's a running back. He's a defensive tackle. He led the team in tackles for a loss for the Center Grove football team. He throws tops out at about 93 miles an hour on the mound, 90 to 92. He's not a big, big guy. He's only 5'10", but listen, he brings it 93 miles an hour. He's actually the last recruit Jeff Mercer just recently picked up. I think it was during the Purdue game, so it might have got overlooked a little bit because of what was going on. But that's Brian Gaffney. He threw 5 innings in that game that he got the win. He got 9 strikeouts. And something to point out, his first start as a sophomore, when they finally moved him out of the bullpen to a starter, he threw a no-hitter, 11 strikeouts. So he kind of got jumped on the scene pretty quick for Santa Grove. But it's also for football, though. If you Google his name into Twitter, more football stuff comes up. It's pretty wild. Long snapper, running back, and defensive lineman. Another high school information here. We got Jack Walker, Ethan Vakrumba, and Kip Fergies for the Indy Star Sports Awards on May 5th. They've been invited. Okay, they award the players of the year for each sport. Now, obviously, baseball won't be over yet, but they've still been acknowledged as one of the 6, I believe, nominees for that award. And should be a fun night. I heard Kip might not be able to make it, though. I heard actually the basketball banquet is that same night, so he might have to go to that. And you go to the state title game, you probably go to that, too. And finally, for high school, for me, this actually was an add-on. Just I didn't even know this was going to obviously happen. But last night, while Hoosier baseball was winning at Victory Field, Dylan Steele was at the BART winning the battle for the bypass for Bloomington North. He moves to 3-0 for the season. He had 8 strikeouts. He topped out at about 92 himself. And he only gave up, let's see, he gave up total 3 runs, but 2 runs and most of the hits were in the last inning when it seemed like he got a little tired. His 90s were turning into mid-80s from when I was reading in the Herald Times. So the closer came in to get the last out, and they wrapped it up. But Dylan definitely looks like a star. From reading the article in the Herald Times, he is so excited to hit IU, to hit the BART running. Should be good stuff. We also had Josh check out the Linton Miners Monday, so we're going to hear from Josh now. He can let us know how that game went. They showed up in his hometown of Bedford, so he went and checked it out.
Yeah, I got to take advantage of both the night off from the podcast and then a short 15-minute drive from my house to head over to Bedford where the Miners were playing. I got to watch 2 future Hoosiers, Kip Fugers, as you had mentioned earlier, Chris, and then his teammate Josh Pine. Fugers played short and third during the game, and Pine was the starting pitcher and finished up the game at shortstop. I guess I picked the right night to go because both kids managed to blast home runs. And yes, the ball definitely had that different sound and jump off the bat like you'd expect from a D1 level talent. the exciting thing to me is these guys both have more time to develop for getting to campus. Kip's a junior and Josh is just a sophomore, but I was really impressed with the way they handled themselves and performed. And I know the high school season is starting to kind of get towards the back half. Sectional drawings will be coming out here in a few weeks, but there's still plenty of opportunities, especially if you're around the Bloomington area, to get out and watch some of these future Hoosiers play. Dylan Steele, like you mentioned, Chris, is at Bloomington North. Casper Clark is at Columbus North. Ethan Vikramba and Luke Hayden are at Edgewood. You can go to iubase.com and click the Future Hoosiers tab to get a full list of players all around the state. And I'd encourage you to look up their schedules and try to get out to a game to support them before the season ends. So, Chris, what do you have for an alumni update?
We'll definitely have some alumni update. But, Josh, if they want to go to Florida and check out Ryan Fisher, they could do that too. You know, just hop on the plane, go watch some high school baseball in Florida or California. You want to go to California, go check out Brent Voth. Yeah. You know, we're spread out pretty good this year. This isn't like the old days where everybody was coming from those three states. But get on a plane, go watch some high school baseball. yeah, we're going to switch over to the alumni. I wanted to thank Pro Bowl Hoosiers once again for hooking us up. He's gathered all the stats. You know, he's able to let us know how these Hoosier alumni are doing in the minor and major leagues. Now, just to start off, Jonathan Stever and Logan Sowers, they had a little bit of a rough start. Maybe it was the transition to the step up to Kannapolis, but we got some good news. Stever got his first W this past week. Six innings, just one run and five Ks. So I would think some good things are coming his way. Logan Sowers hit his first bomb for Kannapolis. So it's good to hear from these guys getting on the stats. We also have our leader in the minor leagues, pitching-wise, is Caleb Barriger, and that's the San Jose Giants. He's pitching to a 1.98 ERA. He's got 20 Ks over 13 innings. And another highlight just recently, Craig Dietelo for the Winston-Salem Dash. He's already hit his third home run. So, I mean, who knows? Craig moved up to double A soon. He's really, his power numbers are showing, that's for sure. The highlight probably of our minor league Hoosier alumni, though, is Alex Dickerson. Big surprise, right? The Alex Dickerson Award. He's hitting 330. He's hit three home runs, 14 RBIs for the El Paso Chihuahuas. Now, San Diego Padres are actually in the race right now, which is, I don't know, surprising. Well, maybe some people had some faith in that when they got Machado and stuff. But I'd love to see them call up Dickerson and get him back to the majors, maybe even at a division race. Who knows? Now that, so Dickerson is definitely our highlight for the minor leagues. Our highlight for the major leagues, surprisingly, and let me tell you, if you had this in the beginning of the season, Josh Fegley. Okay, he has earned the starting job. We talked about this a few weeks ago, that was really his goal, to finally become a starter in the major leagues. And it's his. Manager has announced it. Everybody's talking about it. They did platoon for a little while, him and his backup, but this is Josh's job now. For the first time, he left IU in 09, got called up to the majors with Chicago White Sox in 13, and he's played the backup role up until today. So he's worked real hard for this opportunity, and he's really doing well. He's got three home runs, two doubles. He's hitting 263. I don't know if a lot of people saw, there was a home run rob for Oakland over the weekend, and then the outfielder overthrew first base, and amazingly, the catcher was there to back it up and throw the guy out at second base, and that catcher was Josh Fegley. So his effort showed on that play. And he's not taking this for granted. Absolutely, Josh has been our highlight as far as Hoosier baseball alumni thus far this season. Really want to say congrats to him. You know, we say people go from the bar to the show. I mean, Josh and Dickerson went from Sembauer to the show. So, I mean, this is big-time stuff. I'm real happy for them. And that'll pretty much wrap it up. Once again, thank you to Pro Bowl Hoosiers. You can check him out on Twitter, at Pro Bowl Hoosiers. He gives daily updates, believe it or not, of every pro athlete, every sport. Oh, that reminds me, one quick thing. Cade Crisco has started his season in independent ball in Berlin, Germany, for the Berlin Flamingos, which I spoke to him via Instagram. He's really excited. He's playing middle infield and pitching for the Flamingos. And that's pretty much it for the Hoosier Baseball Alumni Update.
You've got mail. You've got mail.
You've got mail.
You've got mail.
You've got mail.
You've got mail.
It's mailbag time. Well, our one question this week goes to Cassidy. Cassidy, what is the record of the team when both Matts, Gorski and Lloyd, hit versus when they don't?
Okay, so I looked at this from a few different angles, and when both Mats get a hit, the team is 17-5. Get at least a hit, the team is 17-5. So they're pretty important to, you know, the offense working. To highlight that even more, when both Mats have multi-hit games in the same game, the team is 7-0. So if you see both Mats with more than one hit, odds are the Hoosiers are going to win it. When both Mats have a hit within the same inning, the team is 8-2. So again, when both of them are clicking, it's going to be tough to top this offense. Now, when neither of them are clicking, there have only been three games so far this season where they have both played, where neither Mat has gotten a hit. Because there was that Tennessee series where Gorski was out all three games, Lloyd was out one of the games. I didn't count any of those. So there have only been three games so far this season where neither of them have gotten a hit, and the team is 1-2 in those games. So they are obviously pretty important to the lineup. That happens when you're the 2-3 batter. You're kind of important. And so the records do back that up. And since I'm already giving information on records and stats, might as well just move into my key stat portion. And I took a look at more records. While I was looking at records, figured I'd look at some more. And I had tweeted out during the last Michigan State game that this team is pretty darn good when they score in the first inning. The Hoosiers are 15-3 when they score in the first inning. When they don't score in the first inning, it's a little more rough. They're now 13-10. In those games. So if they don't score in the first inning, you're kind of flipping a coin to see what it's going to be. When the Hoosiers score by the third inning, it gets even better at 22-7. But if they don't score by that third inning, it is a legit toss at 6-6. Now when the team is leading toward the end of the game, so when they're leading through six innings, the team is 26-1. They have given up one game where they were leading through six innings. That doesn't include ties. When they're not leading through the sixth inning, they have a hard time fighting back. They're 2-12. And it's the exact same for the seventh inning and pretty close in the eighth. If they're leading in the eighth inning, they're going to win it. They're 27-1 in those games. When they're not leading through the eighth inning, they're 1-12. They have won one game that they were not leading through the eighth inning. So this team, they do best when they get out, pounded early, score a lot of runs early on, and then cruise and hang on the rest of the game. And just out of curiosity, yesterday, I took a look at when the Hoosiers score first, regardless of who's batting first or second, if they're home or away, the team is 21-5 when they score first. When they don't score first, they're 7-8. So that's just one more piece that shows these guys like to heat up quickly and early. I also took a little bit of a look at the lefty-righty matchups for the team. And I was a little surprised when I looked at it. The Hoosiers have about double the number of plate appearances and at-bats versus right-handed pitchers compared to left-handed pitchers. That's nothing unusual. The part that's weird is the averages are almost the same. The team's batting 267 against left-handed pitchers and 264 against right-handed pitchers. I think that's about the most even I've seen it for this late in the season. That's pretty impressive to be hitting off both sides that well. there is marginally more power to the versus left-handed pitchers compared to right-handed pitchers. The home runs in particular are higher against left-handed pitchers. The Hoosiers are hitting a home run about every 19 plate appearances against left-handers. That jumps up to a home run every 25 plate appearances versus right-handers. Now, some of that's going to be the smaller numbers on the versus left-handers. It's still relatively small, but not that small that you can't start to compare the numbers. I looked at the lefty righty. I also tweeted after that weird ninth inning yesterday. I'll probably go more into this next week when we really talk about it, but they kind of flipped the script on ninth inning scoring. Put up 5 runs when they had scored 9 total in the ninth inning all season. So there have been some fun numbers the last couple of weeks. So Carl, how did this last week shape the Hoosiers' postseason resume?
Well, the postseason resume is really starting to take shape. The team is now 22nd in the RPI in the country with a record of 28-13. First place in the Big Ten at 9-3. A couple of different breakdowns here. Road is 8-8. So the team is now, after that Michigan State series, 500 in road games. Neutral sites after last night, 4-2. Non-conference strength of schedule is huge. That's 14th in the country in non-conference strength of schedule. So a very, very strong non-con. I think two things that have really shaped that is, first of all, how good the Tennessee Volunteers are. And second, how good Evansville has been. When, you know, I looked at Evansville as the worst team on the whole schedule, and now they're the highlight of this resume. Which brings me to the next portion, which is a record against the top 50. That is a 6-4 right now. Now, 4 of those 6 wins are against Evansville, who is currently number 34 in the RPI. So Evansville had slipped a little bit after losing the series to IU, but they have already charged back a bit. Hoosier fans are going to want to take a really close look at Evansville's games the rest of the season. We are all big Aces fans going forward. We want that team to finish in the top 50. We want those to be top 50 wins. And it's not going to be easy. They're probably going to have to win about 80% of their games going down the stretch to maintain a top 50 RPI. But it's doable, and this team has proven that they can win lots of games. So the best series wins is Evansville. The worst series lost wasn't horrible. It was the Seattle tourney, you know, against number 2 Oregon State, and also against number 69 and number 64, where they went 1-2. The best overall wins are Connecticut, the 4 against Evansville, and the midweek against Indiana State. The team does have 3 bad losses, which are defined by teams with a RPI of 151 or higher. The worst loss is this one this past weekend against Michigan State. Then that Friday night game against Penn State. And then the home midweek against Kent State, which we all know was bad on multiple levels. So that'll take me. I'll discuss one other topic, which is the needs report. Boyd's World has a really great tool called the Needs Report, which breaks down a team and basically the number of wins it needs under Boyd's algorithm to get to a specific spot in the RPI, which generally equals a certain seed in the tournament. So for a hosting seed, Boyd's has Indiana needing to finish the regular season before the Big Ten tournament at 41-14, which would require going 13-1 down the stretch. My model, as my prediction model and my game kind of game by game analysis with the RPIs and all the calculations, Has the team going 9-5 down the stretch and 17-7 in the Big Ten for a total record of 37-18, which would be 25th in the RPI, a solid 2 seed. Four, according to Boyd's, according to get a 2 seed requires 7-7 down the stretch. To get a top 45 seed, which is a bubble placement for the tournament, that is a 5-9 record going forward. So the Hoosiers are in really, really good shape and completely in control of their own destiny to make the postseason. And there is an outside shot, and it is just an outside shot of getting to a regional. Now, the
getting
one
to host a regional, you mean?
Yeah, I'm sorry, to host a regional.
Okay.
Yeah, to have temporary bleachers
We're
at the bar.
We're going to regional.
Yeah, the team should be going to. I mean, it would have to be a major, major collapse at this point to not make a regional. But the team has the possibility to host a regional. But they're going to have to play ridiculously well over the last 4 weeks and probably also into the Big Ten tournament in Omaha. Those things are going to happen if this team expects to host. Now, I will pull back on that a little bit. 13-1 may not be required. Perhaps 11-3, as long as there's enough wins in the Big Ten conference to equal a Big Ten tournament, a Big Ten league title, and then win a couple of games, a couple of early games in particular in the Big Ten tournament. You pair a league title regular season with an RPI around 20. And not fall on their face in the Big Ten tournament, that might be enough to host. The Big Ten champion, I think this committee is gonna want to reward the Big Ten champion. They're gonna have to be close in RPI. It can't be 25. You know, it's gonna have to be like a top 20 RPI.
But what I think about that a, might what about be a positioning for a 2 seed? Like, if we are a very high RPI, like say 25, 26, and we finish out the 9-5 maybe that you spoke about, would that affect where we go? Like, I don't want to go to Texas again. I see Louisville coming up. I see Vanderbilt coming up. Were they going to give us some kind of preference playing closer to home as a better 2 seed?
There's one reason this team did not play close to home last year.
Because we can afford a jet.
Two reasons. That's a good one. That's a good one. No, because if you look at the map, there wasn't any place close to home.
Right.
So there's got to be teams that are earning regionals close by. Louisville is Louisville's going to host barring
Vandy,
something.
Right?
Vandy's relatively close. They're going to host.
Yeah, that's close.
Tennessee
enough.
Is going to host. Well, not right now. If the season ended today, Tennessee would be hosting. They're going to have to do some work down the stretch in the SEC, but Tennessee may be hosting.
And if we're on the higher end of the 2 seed, are we going to give some kind of preference, or how do you think this is going to work out?
No, it's going to be – the way I see it is regional is set first.
Mm.
So basically, they're going to try to place teams that are close by first. Then after that, the teams that have to travel, usually there is kind of a rhyme or reason as to the pecking order that you try to put, okay, if you're going to travel – and we think you're the number 30 team, we're probably going to send you to one of the better hosts.
Okay.
But for the, because you look at when IU went to Texas, the other two teams, the 3 and the 4 seed, were both Texas teams.
Yeah, and the 3 seed so, was SEC.
Yeah, who had a hosting level RPI.
Yeah. I'm trying to at least get a better regional this year. Last year, that was a rough region, even though we got to the regional final. I mean, we did it. We knocked out Texas A&M.
But
send us somewhere better.
Yeah, but then it's all about, you know, who's hosting nearby. One that you might not think about, West Virginia is in play for a host this year. So there's a lot of opportunities out there. I would think that you look at the national publications, Louisville's tends to pop up a lot. I think they popped up in my last algorithm. So, you know, Louisville is a legitimate possibility because it's of how close Indiana is.
But see, could that hurt Louisville because we're so good they're not going to put us there because it's not fair to them?
No, that doesn't matter.
Okay, that's what I'm trying to ask. All right.
Yeah, nope. You're a 2 seed, you're close, you're going.
And that would apply to Vanderbilt also.
Right. Now, Now, let's say this: there's something that could make that distinction, Chris, mm-hmm. which is, let's say Evansville is a two seed. If Evansville is a two seed, then they're going to Louisville.
Because we can afford a jet. That part I know.
Exactly. Right, that's right, where that the jet like thing that will come into place.
I do not like the part of this.
Right. So that's, if Evansville or Indiana State are in the mix, they're more likely to stay as mid-majors. They're more likely to get priority to stay close. But got there it. Aren't going to be a ton of two seeds close to Louisville. That's what's figuring that out. But it's just one of those things that it's where teams land, and this can change all the way up to Selection Monday. And then you also sometimes just have head scratchers like Wright State going to Stanford last year. It's just stuff like that happens. So, yeah. Well, the Hoosiers have already played this week's midweek, and next week is finals. So all eyes are on the weekend series against Minnesota. And Josh has our preview.
Thanks, Carl. Yeah, this weekend the Hoosiers will be at the BART for a very important Big Ten series against the Minnesota Golden Gophers. Minnesota stands at 17-20 overall, 7-5 in the Big Ten with an 8-9 road record. They start off slowly at 2-11, but picked it up a little bit to get to that record now. But they're coming off of losing 2-3 at home to Oklahoma this last weekend. Last year, they swept us in a crushing series in Minnesota. And the year before, they handed us two losses at the Big Ten tournament when it was here at the BART. So safe to say they've been a big thorn in our side recently. They were picked by coaches in most publications to win the Big Ten this year and are tied for fifth with two out in the loss column. Pitching-wise, most would expect to hear Patrick Fredrickson's name being listed here as a big guy. He was Big Ten Pitcher of the Year last season, but he's pitched only one-third of an inning since the end of March. And before that, hadn't gone past 5 2/3 innings all year and is sitting at a 5.74 ERA. So, we're guessing that he's not going to be a factor this weekend. Former closer Max Meyer has been the Friday night guy this season and is actually the DH on days when he's not pitching. He's hitting .283 with a home run and four doubles and 12 RBI, which isn't incredible, but what he's done on the mound has been. He has a 1.93 ERA over 56 innings with 60 strikeouts and only 15 walks. Should be a great test for this hot Hoosier offense. Hopefully they can get Paulie some runs on a Friday night against a real tough dude. The other spots of the rotation have been moving around a little bit. I'm going to guess we'll see Jake Stevenson on Saturday. He's 1-2 with a 5.72 ERA. And Jody Culliver is 2-3 with a 5.52 ERA on Sunday. Out of the pen, we should see plenty of right-handed pitcher Brett Schultz. He has 5 saves and 5 wins and has a sub-5 ERA in 28 innings pitched. And lefty Nick Lackney, who has a 3.09 ERA and 32 innings pitched. As a staff, this team's only given up 20 home runs all season, but has a 4.46 ERA. Offensively, they're led by junior catcher Eli Wilson. He's the only guy batting over 300. He's sitting at .307. Junior shortstop Jordan Kazicki is the leader in home runs and RBI, 7 home runs, 36 RBI. And senior center fielder Ben Mazinga has 11 steals. That's leading the team, and 25 walks, which is also leading the team. Friday night, we have a 6 o'clock start. It's going to be firework night at the BART. Forecast looks great, 66 and sunny. First pitch. Saturday's a 2 p.m. start. Baseball cards, which is one of the favorites of a lot of the kids and even some of the adults there at the BART. Looking 58 and cloudy with a chance of thunderstorms until around 5 p.m. So Saturday may be dicey. But hey, it's Indiana in the springtime, so we won't really know much until it's game time. And then Sunday's a 12 noon start. It's superhero caps night or day. 60 degree for a high, with a mix of clouds and sunshine, so we're looking pretty good on Sunday. So that'll wrap up our preview and show tonight. One thing of note is after this weekend, you only have 4 regular season home games to come out to the BART to cheer on the Hoosiers. So, you know, it's time, if you haven't been out, it's time to get out there and show them support. So that'll do it for this edition of Talking Hoosier Baseball. Read up on Indiana baseball at iubase.com. Follow us on Twitter at CUatTheBART and at iubase17. Please leave us a review on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. For Cassidy Palmer, Chris Feeney, and Carl James, I'm Josh Bennett. See you at the BART.
I'm going back to Indiana now to see my baby in her evening gown. And even if the world is burning.